You've probably heard this saying, there's two things you should not bring up at Thanksgiving, and those are religion and politics. I would just say for politics, good luck with the election coming, good luck with that. And for religion, well, today we're going to talk about evangelization. And this comes from a series we've been working on, and for our visitors for the last few weeks, we've been focusing on this theme of receive and respond. And first, we've been talking about what it means to receive God's call. And we've seen that God calls us for our good and the good of others. God calls us from our comfort into the pain and needs of others, and God's call requires faith and strengthens faith. So that's been what it is a bit to receive God's call, and then how do we respond exactly? How does God call us to respond? And part of that response we're going to see today is to share what we've been given, to share our faith, to evangelize. And as I use that word, I know that that is a word that scares us sometimes, that word of evangelize, and there are a few reasons why. And one of them I know that can sometimes happen, where you hear the word evangelize, we think evangelical, and then we think American political conservatives, and then we think Donald Trump. It's all sort of tied together. And I don't want to get political, because that is not what we mean. These things are not related. But often they can sort of run together in our heads. And a second reason we can tend to dislike this word is it can feel arrogant. And we can often think of the question, well, who am I to tell a Buddhist or a Muslim, leave your faith and join mine? Who am I to do that? And that is a fair question. And so today, in light of these readings, we're going to look at that. And what does our faith say about evangelization and people of other religions? And first of all, to look at what our faith does not say. And our faith does not say that they are completely wrong and we've got it all figured out. And also our faith does not say that they are all sinful and we are all morally upright. That is not what we say either. But we do say that we have something unique to offer. We have something beautiful and true, in fact, to offer. And the first reading illustrates that really well. And to understand what's happening in the first reading, I needed to give a little bit of the backstory, because what we heard today was just the conclusion of a larger story. And the story starts with a fellow named Naaman the Syrian. He was a commander in the Syrian army, pretty high up. And so as a Syrian, he was not Jewish, and he worshipped different gods, the gods of Syria. And Syria is just north of Israel. But Naaman has a problem that his faith can't solve. And that problem for Naaman is leprosy. He's contracted leprosy, and nothing that he or his country people can do can heal him of it. But then he hears about a god in Israel who is doing some great things. And so he travels down to Israel, and he asks for help. And as he's asking for help, he meets the prophet Elisha. And the prophet Elijah tells him to wash 7 times in the Jordan River. And at this point, Naaman is a little bit reluctant. He even says, we've got better rivers in Syria than this one. Why would I wash in that one and not my ones back home? But he figured, I came all this way, I'll give it a try. And as we heard today, he washes 7 times in the Jordan, and he is healed. And then the main part of the story that we hear today is his response to this miraculous healing. And there are really 2 parts to his response. First of all is thanksgiving. Thanksgiving to Elijah, thanksgiving to the God who healed him. And also there's the decision, yes, from now on, I'm only going to worship this God. He said, I know there's no true God but this one. And from now on, I'm only going to worship him. And we have this weird thing at the very end of the story where he asks to take a bunch of soil from Israel back to Syria. And the reason for that, this is a little bit of the cultural background, is there was an understanding at that time that gods were localized. And so as a Syrian, he would have thought that Syria was sort of for, he had his own gods for Syria, and this god was just for Israel. So if you're going to worship the God of Israel, you need to take a little bit of Israel with you. So he takes this Israeli soil, and he'll use that back home to set up a place to worship the Israeli God. So he says, now I'm not going to worship any god but this one. And even saying, really, there's no real god but this one, he says. And so this essentially is evangelization. This is the prophet Elisha sharing what God has given him with Naaman, even sharing his God with Naaman. And also, this is a good illustration of a great line we heard in the second reading. And this, we have St. Paul writing from prison. And Paul says, the word of God is not chained. And Paul says, I am in prison. I am writing you in chains. But the word of God is not chained. And what does that mean? Well, there's a lot of ways we could go with this, but part of what it means is that there is a desire for God in every human heart. And it means that the word of God is widely at work throughout the world, helping people to come to know God and follow him. And the evidence that we have for this is every society that we know of in human history is a religious society. And in fact, the only examples we have in history of majority atheist countries are just a few communist countries from that time. And that was just the result of brutal persecution, and it didn't last. And as soon as freedom of religion came back itself. And so we do find in every society in history the idea that God or that spiritual realities exist, and there is a desire to try to understand them and to live in union with them. And we can think of traditional African religions, think of indigenous spirituality in the Americas before the Europeans came, think of Hindu religions in India, Taoism in China, Buddhism, Islam. It is really everywhere. And from the Christian standpoint, when we look at all these religions, there are some things in them that we would see as true. Think of in the indigenous spirituality that there is one creator who made us and who desires our good. We would agree with that. And there are some things, too, that we would disagree with. Think maybe in the Aztec religion, the belief that there are lots of gods and that they want human sacrifice. That is not a thing that we would agree with. So what we do see, though, is religion as a universal human experience. And throughout history, throughout the world, people seeking God and trying to understand and follow him. And so we see this everywhere. But of all these religions, there's one of them that stands apart in the claim that it makes. And it's not about saying who's right and wrong. We're not going there right now. But just in the claim that they make. And what I mean by that is every other religion, we find people searching for God, people trying to figure God out. And they may believe that they found the particular wisdom or insight from one really wise person or from a community, or maybe God came to help them out. But there's only one religion whose founder actually claims to be God. And that is key. Not just a person with special insight about God, but God himself. And that is unique. And it starts, of course, with Judaism. And the Jewish belief is that God chose them specially from all the nations of the world. And he didn't choose them because he didn't care about the rest of the world, but God chose them so that the whole world would be blessed through them. That's the promise to Abraham. And over time, we see in the Old Testament, this blessing promise coalesced around the figure of a Messiah, this promised Messiah that would come. And then Jesus comes. And Jesus claims to be that Messiah. And Jesus also claims to be God. And this really is the key Christian claim. And as we've heard, the word of God is not chained. The word of God at work throughout the world. And at one point, we believe, the word of God became man. And if that is not true, we don't have a whole lot to offer. But if that is true, then how do we not share it? How do we keep this to ourselves? And again, this is not to go to people of other faiths and say, I'm right, you're wrong, agree with me, or go to hell. That's not how we want to do it. But it is to say something like, what if this God that you love, this God that you're striving to follow and striving to learn about, what if this God entered human history? What if this God became a human being to show us who he is and who we are? And what if this God, in fact, became what we are, so we can become what he is? Can I tell you about that? That's one way we could have our approach. And the gospel too sheds lights on this in a helpful way, as we have Jesus healing the 10 people with leprosy, and one goes back to give thanks. But what did this man do on his way back to give thanks? Well, this is what we heard from the gospel. When he saw that he was healed, he turned back, praising God with a loud voice. Praising God with a loud voice, he goes back to see Jesus. And notice here the way that Jesus, what he recommends and what this guy did, Jesus doesn't say, only one came back to say thanks to me. But Jesus says, only one came back to give praise to God. And what this shows us is that when we do evangelize, we must not evangelize from arrogance, but we do it from a deep gratitude of who God is and what he has done for us. And just one closing thought. Because of Thanksgiving, I want to close with a final image of how Thanksgiving is and is not like evangelization. And let's just imagine for a moment that I think my grandma makes the best stuffing ever, the best anyone could ever have, and it's so good, I need to share it. So if I were to stand on a street corner and yell at anyone who walked by, my grandma's stuffing is better than yours, that is not what we mean by evangelization. That is not an example. Or if I were to trick people into coming into my house and then guilt them into trying my grandma's stuffing, that would not be evangelization. But let's say I've got a friend who isn't sure what to do for Thanksgiving. Their family's far away. And so I invite them. Do you want to come join my family? Would you like to come share my meal? I bet you love my grandma's stuffing. And my friend comes and he tries it and he says, "Wow, this is the best stuffing I've ever had. Can I have the recipe?" That is something like what we mean by this call to evangelization.